The last meeting we had, we talked about what is reality, and the title of the series this weekend is Out of Control, and that can mean two things. But tonight we're going to talk about the two realities, and I want to start out by reading a poem, because Dana always writes a poem for every retreat. So Dana, if you're out there, here we go. So Dana wrote a poem called I. She said, I am spinning the wheels in search of a place where love always reigns beyond time or space, wanting that peace that just is and not earned, as I study ancient books to be memorized and learned. I travel on a journey to try to understand, to become more enlightened to a master plan, to preserve its essence, to remain in control, to make sure I's name is written on a scroll. I doesn't want truth, because then it won't thrive. I needs to exist, it needs separateness to survive. I needs that sense of personal being. I looks in the mirror and believes what it's seeing. As long as there is an I, it will always be in control. It has to have something to bring about its goal. This something has been called God, love, even fate. In the end, it's still the same. Get rid of what I hates. For the I creates and exalts its uniqueness to hide the oneness so that it don't believe this. There are no others, no opposites. There's no you and no I, no separate individual that love can deny.
Good.
Yeah, she really encapsulates all of what's been being shared. And of course, we're turning up the heat on the I, the you, the me. And that's what out of control means. Unless things are outside of our control, and we relax into that space of nothingness, I know that's a hard word to hear. We are trapped. We're imprisoned in this belief that we create in this world. And so thank you, Dana. So I want to talk more about the illumination of two realities. There's a natural reality, which we really focused in August. And this natural reality is the true reality. And this true reality, this natural reality, is the realization of unconditional love as everything, all the time. The state of this reality is a state of omnipresence. So not only is it everything all the time, it's everywhere all at once. So something that's unconditional and omnipresent all at the same time can never be controlled. And this is the dilemma that we find ourselves in, because it always is this. It's always now. It never is anything else. And that's why it can't be controlled. Everything can't be controlled. It's everything. And it even includes us when we're out of control. It is really nothing being everything all at once. This is it. It's right now. We're in it, full on. Every microsecond, this is it. This is reality. This is eternal life. And it can't be grasped or owned. This is why it cannot be controlled in any way. Because there's no way to control omnipresence and everything. I mean, how could you do that? It's impossible. I mean, even if you started a list, it would take you forever to compile a list, and it'd just be a small fraction of everything. And so paradise, we talked about paradise lost with the question mark. That was the first lesson in August. Paradise has never went anywhere. And it's not a small garden where the Euphrates and the Tigris meet in a desert south of Egypt. And of course, the allegories and the stories in the Bible that talk about this, we take stuff so literally that we don't really understand the essence of the meaning. But man fell out of paradise when he became separate, when he became an individual. And this was the dilemma in the garden. So paradise never went anywhere, because paradise is everything all the time. Without our judgment, without a sense of right or wrong, or good or evil. And so it can't be grasped. And this is the harder part. Because it can't be grasped, and because it's omnipresent, there can be no plan, and there can be no purpose. It's wild. It's chaotic. It's everything all the time. You're smack dab full in it, no matter where you're at or what you're doing. And so it can have no plan, and it can have no purpose. Now, this is really hard to hear, but this is the natural reality. Because if you have a plan, you got to follow the plan. If you've got a purpose, you got to follow the purpose. And is it the right plan? Or is it the wrong plan? Or do I have the right purpose or the wrong purpose? And see, this starts to entrap us in the sense of separation. So since we've been talking about non-duality, we've been talking about the fact that we're not separate for years. This isn't anything new. Well, how can you not be separate? And the beginning of that is to realize that paradise is everything. It's this. It's right now. It never changes. And I've got some quotes I'm going to share with you that are just beautiful that talk about this. Well, this is the natural reality. And so tonight we're talking about two realities. Well, what's the other reality? And I'm calling it a reality to sort of soften the blow a little bit. Because it's a dream reality. And in the dream, this seems real. This seems real. The coffee cup seems real. And in the moment, it is all real. There's nothing unreal about any of it. But the problem is, our minds are continuously processing what's right or wrong for the me. And then it expands out into what's right or wrong for the world. And this is where all of our frustration comes from, because we haven't clearly identified the dream reality enough for it to quiet us and to slow us down long enough to realize that nothing is ever out of order at any time. Well, that just fries the mind. It just paralyzes the mind. And what is the mind? It's got a lot of names. The serpent, the devil, Satan. Jesus said, Satan comes and he has nothing in me. Well, that's just because Jesus didn't believe in his own mind judging what's right or wrong about what was occurring. So this dream reality, we can call it your life. This is the dream reality, to think that you have a life. It's built on the illusion of identity and personality. A self that stands alone in a subject-object world. And I mean, there's a lot going on out there, folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was reading about how much coffee we buy every day. Did you know that the coffee industry is a $1 billion industry? Was it $3 billion a day we all spend on coffee? $3 billion per day. I mean, no wonder there's a coffee shop on every corner. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. Because what we're talking about, the true reality, includes everything. It includes the boom going off at the neighbors. We've got hillbilly neighbors that are always firing stuff off all the time. It's a little bit exciting. I think they're competing with me because they know I do fireworks, you know. So, how did all this start? Because my passion and love for everyone is to reveal what? The truth. It's not, I don't want to make you feel good about yourself, because that's not what we're here for. It's not about making this illusion of the dream reality fluffy and making it nice and kind, because it's where all of our suffering comes from. It's where all of our dilemmas come. It's where all our pain comes from, is not understanding the depth of this true reality. So how did it start? Well, it started at birth. You know, that's where it all began. And the nakedness of being, what we begin to awaken into this separate identity. It comes from being in the presence of others. And this second reality is given a name. We've got a mark tattooed on our ass. I am Michael Olin Nevins. And I'm taught to stand up for myself. I'm taught right and what's right and wrong, right from the beginning. And we go out from this birth state of not really having any idea about what we should do or not do, and we're taught at birth, and the whole world is really the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because it's always calling to us to judge it, all the time. It's wanting us to judge it. Everything's sold based on the judgment of what's right or wrong, good or better. This is, and there's nothing wrong with it in this dream reality. We just got to realize it's a dream reality. But in that dream reality, there's nothing right or wrong with it. But we just have to realize that it's the dream reality. And so I give it the name reality, just like I said, just to soften it a little bit. But it's very real to all of us as we're running around and going about doing our things. Because most of the time, and this is the harder part, most of the time, if not the majority of the time, we're living in the moment just ahead of ourselves. I've got to do this, and I've got to do that, and I've got to accomplish this, and I've got to accomplish that. And I was listening to a guy the other day, and the guy was saying to him, what advice could you give someone that's beginning to understand this true reality? Because the true reality is beyond words and thoughts. It's really not something that can be taught in its entirety. How could you teach everything? So it's beyond words and thoughts. And he said the best thing you could do is just to learn to relax. He called it another virtue. He called it the virtue of laziness.
Yeah,
now that isn't very popular. That's not really popular to say there's a virtue of laziness. But when we begin to understand this true reality, how much do we really relax in this dream reality? And listen, all of us are affected by it. I'm not excluded. I'm not up here greater than anyone. I've realized the nothingness of my being. And I know what it is. But it doesn't mean that if you followed me around, that it wouldn't ever appear that I don't get caught up in it, because I do. But I'm quicker to release myself and to relax more and to settle down more and wait for things to come to me. Ah, Levon.
Hi.
Hello, Angie. Hi.
Hi.
Let me get another chair for you.
We've got our friends from Kalamazoo. Hello. Good to see you.
I was just talking about the virtue of laziness. And so I'm liking that.
The virtue of laziness.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about the virtue of laziness?
There you go.
Oh, I like that or not. Oh, you'll like it when you continue.
I like to work too hard.
So we were talking about how the separate identity got started, and we've been talking about from birth how it's influenced in our lives. And the thing is, even when we're sharing these things, somehow there can be an impression that I'm trying to give you some rules. But in this natural reality, there are no rules. There can't be any rules if there's no purpose or plan to dwelling and living in this natural reality. So there's nothing right or wrong about what anyone's doing. That's never ever the issue. That's just coming from the mind of judgment, saying this is right or wrong. But if we could learn, as this gentleman shared with me, if we could just learn to relax, and this is where I come up with the virtue of laziness, it's really just relaxing in the realm of this natural reality, which is everything. And understanding that paradise never went anywhere, that Adam and Eve removed themselves from paradise when they realized a separate identity, when they realized that they had to do something to make life happen. But if life is everything all the time, there's nothing you can do to make life happen. And so living in the spontaneity of everything is really the key. And how can you do that? It has to be sort of a relinquishing and resting and relaxing and, I guess, expanding on this virtue of laziness to a point where you can, how about just taking a breath? How about just walking around the block and realizing nothing's out of order? Just the understanding and realization that nothing is out of order at any time should relax you. It should make this constricted energy that we call ourselves just take a break and just relax into the reality that you can never make a mistake. When we get into the world of making mistakes or not making mistakes, we're really feeding from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There's always something right or wrong about it. And we never can relax in that state. There's never any relaxation. And so, just to get away from it, is a good thing. So we begin on this journey as we are young children and we begin to grow up. We begin on this journey to believe that we can and need to influence our story. The story of me, the story of the dream reality, that I'm a separate person and I'm an object and all of this out here is separate from me. And I have to do something with it. We've taught that we've got a free will and a free choice, and then we work hard at trying to manipulate the story, trying to line up, to have it line up with my plan for the future. Still again, you know, I think we mentioned right before you came in, guys, that most of us live just ahead of ourselves in everything. It's hard to relax when you're always living in the next moment or the next day. And you're still going to plan. You're still going to do things. I think it was one of the Catholic mystics or once said time. He said, well, what would you do before you realize this reality? He said, well, I was chopping wood yesterday and I'll chop wood tomorrow. So nothing changes. I mean, if you want a house, you're going to have to go to work so you can make your house payment. These things are sort of really trying to get into the nitty-gritty of all that and argue about it just doesn't mean anything. I don't care what anybody does. This isn't about controlling anyone. we grow up in this sense that all there is this life just beyond where we're dwelling. And at some point we begin to become dissatisfied with this. We believe that there's this quest to move from a lower self, which really is just focused on pleasure and feeding the me all the time, to this higher self, which might be more reserved. And that's really where religion comes into play. And even a lot of the gurus and Mideastern teachers still teach us that we have to try to control the end game. And the separate reality of me, this lower and higher self, is still a dream. Now, here's something that really makes it more clear. Why is it a dream? Because the majority of the time, we're judging what we think is going to happen from our history. And I've said many, many times that if I could go in and just one at a time, just completely wipe your memory out so that you had absolutely no memory, it would be impossible for you to judge anything because you'd have nothing to base it on. You'd have no information. So the brain is an amazing instrument. I mean, it's a supercomputer. But this is what's happening, is it's really, we're usually dwelling in what's happened in our life, and we move right by the natural reality and what's going to happen tomorrow. And this is where fear is created about what's going to happen or what could happen tomorrow. So we go to religion or we go to therapy. We begin to focus on trying to improve the higher self by listening to gurus. We'll sit in caves and eat rice. We'll do all these things. But it doesn't change the fact that we're still idolizing and trying to build up this dream reality, this thing that never can dwell in the moment, that never understands what it means to relax and just enjoy life. Because whether you believe it or not, there is no control, and that's the title of this weekend series, is we think we have control, and there is no control. People go to Mecca. I mean, look at all the millions of people that move slowly around this temple out east. Well, everybody's trying to find something. Everybody's looking for something that they don't have. And so the real relief to all of this is really understanding that we have everything all the time. We have everything that's needed for life. It never changes. And so in this feeling of relaxation, in this feeling of this virtue called laziness, the mind can slow down, and we learn that true life, the true reality, is really a life that's spontaneous. I mean, they've talked about in neuroscience about us making choices and the fact that there's absolutely no free will. Before you raise your hand to say yes to a question, they've learned scientifically that your brain has already made the decision long before you raise your hand. It's amazing how this works. So this is our supply to realize that everything that's happening in our life is for us, and it's perfect for us, and nothing's ever out of order. And it's really a place of true relaxation. It's a place where we can pause and just enjoy each other to a greater extent, and not just picking apart, you know, each other. And it's more difficult when you have relationships, but this is where we were taught all this stuff, is in all of our relationships. One of the places, and tomorrow afternoon I'm going to talk a little more about death and what that really means, and have some scriptures that really talk about the true meaning of it. But when we go into deep sleep, we enter in to a reality where the real me disappears. You're still there. Nothing has changed. But in this deep sleep, this is the real you. When people pass and they leave this body, this corporeal body of the five senses and all the things it does, where do they go? They enter back into what's never changed. And tomorrow I'm going to read you a beautiful, beautiful script that was put in this memorial of my uncle. And I couldn't believe it was there. It was just unbelievable. The thing is, I know there isn't a human being in the world that really believes what was written. There isn't any of us that believe it. And yet here it was, staring at me the whole time we were having this service. It was just beautiful. So, we have nighttime dreams. And I don't know about you guys, but I do a lot of dreaming. I mean, it's intense. And that doesn't mean a thing. I'm just sharing with you my experience. But a lot of times, the dream will continue, even if I get up to go to the bathroom or I need a drink of water. I can go back, and the majority of the time, I step right back into the dream that I woke up from, knowing that it's a dream, knowing that it's not real. But when I'm in the dream, it sure seems real to me. When I'm in the middle of it, it seems very real. And I don't even want to get into some of the details because I'll remember for days the dream I've had two or three days ago. I could sit right now and tell you all the things I dreamed last night in detail. And sometimes it's fun, sometimes it isn't. I think I shared with you once, I had this dream that these lions were coming after me, and one of them eventually bit my hip. And a lot of times when something real dramatic happens, I'll wake up and I'm feeling my hip, you know, I'm saying, geez, that hurt, you know. Then I realized it wasn't real. And the reason I'm talking about this is that when we wake up every morning to the dream of me. And why is it so difficult to understand this? We take on this role of me, and it seems really real. The dream of me seems very real, and that is because the nighttime dream usually is very chaotic. But the daytime dream is very consistent. That's the reason it seems so real. It's still a dream. As long as you believe that you're independent, an independent self with the free will and free choice, you're really in fear all the time. There's never a sense of peace. And this is really the root of it. But Nancy Brooke talked about it last time when we were talking about what is reality. Well, if reality is everything all the time, this is it. There's nothing that you can control in it. It can't be controlled. Everything in a microsecond can't ever be controlled. And it's always right on. It's always reality. And that's the sense I want to try to express to you, that when we understand, when we wake up, this dream of me is not really seen is because it's so consistent. It slows way down. And it seems very, very real to us. So when Nancy was talking about it, she said, "Thank you so much, Mike, for helping me to realize the human dream." She said, "Then my second dilemma was that every day when I get up, I go, Eeyore, just another boring day." That's very consistent. I mean, if it's boring and it's the same thing every day, that's really consistent. And this is one of the reasons that it's difficult to realize it's a dream. There's nothing right or wrong with it. I'm just wanting to help you recognize that it's still a dream and help you understand what it means to live from within where the kingdom of heaven dwells, which nothing is ever out of order in this kingdom. This is why Jesus kept telling them and trying to draw them within to themselves and said, everything there is within you. It's the spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself, but it was a hard message. This daytime dream of me has withdrawn itself from the natural reality and becomes a constricted, separated self. It really, it's tense. You know, because it doesn't know what's going to happen in the next moment. It doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But we all know, we've talked about this so many times, that there's no such thing as tomorrow. There's no such thing as 10 minutes from now. We never get there. No one ever gets there. And so it's so important to understand the dynamic of this natural reality and understanding that everything is in order. So I have good news. I want to talk about the gospel a little bit and how I see its role and how it's played up, but it's really in the scripture very clearly. And that there's absolutely nothing wrong with you in any way. Everybody said, oh yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. Well, you'd say, well, that's good news, Mike. Geez, I knew that. You didn't have to tell me that. It's the good news. There's nothing wrong with you in any way. But the real reason there's nothing wrong with you in any way is because there's no you. Now that should be good news. Because if there's no you, there's nobody to condemn, is there?
Oh yeah.
Huh?
There you go.
Yeah. If there's no you, there's no one to condemn. There's no one that needs to be responsible. There's no right or wrong about you. And see, we get so easily tangled up in what's right or wrong with our life. Or what's right or wrong with the other person. I mean, I still holler at my wife because she's doing pretty good with the coffee the last couple months. But I said, honey, all I want out of you is a good cup of coffee. If I make it, it just doesn't taste as good. And I love it when I can get a good cup of coffee. And then Liz always shows up, even though we tell her not to, and she still brings me cookies. And I love to dunk cookies in my coffee, even though I do too many and I start feeling not so good.
But seven cookies at once.
Yeah, seven or 11, I say. It's either seven or 11. I quit counting, you know. But my mom, every birthday, makes me a big box of the best chocolate chip cookies in the world. They're just a little bit better than Liz's. And what do? The next day, you know what happens? I'm sick.
Yeah.
Because I polish off just about the whole box. I get Dunkin', and man, that one was good, and the second one's good, and the third one's good. But if there's absolutely nothing wrong with you in any way, it's because there's no you. Now that should be good news. Really, it's this identity that I build up and create is where all the right and wrong comes into. See? Well, there's no right and wrong about it because there isn't a you that's right or wrong. It's not about a life of good and evil. And we've said this stuff till we're blue in the face, but the real key to it is to understand that it's our death, this death of the you, which is the keys to the kingdom. It's this death of this separate identity, this illusion of identity. That's talked about. This is where all of our difficulties come from in life. And so it's good news that there's no you. That should be really good news. And if we expand on it in that way, I think it can make it a little more palatable. But as long as there is a self, a you or a me, to any degree, all you can experience is separation. There's always a sense of separation and fear. But how could anyone be separate from everything? Everything includes you. But it's not the you think you are that it includes. See, that's where all the problems fall in line. That's where all the difficulties fall in line, is we've got a misunderstanding of our real identity, that we think we're separate from everything instead of being one with everything. So, this understanding, this experience of separation, keeps us imprisoned to the constricted sense of self. And so this is what happens when we're born, is we begin to become constricted into the self, where everything is outside of us and we want to control. Hello, I have a business. The most wonderful thing about my business right now is I've had several people that's been there for years. My two main people, my two vice presidents, have been there 12 years. And I've become very lazy when it comes to the business. And guess what? I'm really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying it. And I tell them, I said, I want you guys to own this thing. I want you to live and die from your mistakes. And they've made some big ones. And they think I'm going to freak out. And I said, well, can we afford to pay for it? And I said, yeah. I said, well, we're fine. I said, you've got to make this happen, because I don't want to keep doing this till I'm 90. I just don't want to. And Diane and I have been struggling with some things, and so it's helped me so I can stay at home more with her and help her, and I love it. I enjoy staying home and not doing as much. But it's taken 20 years to get to that place. But it's the most wonderful feeling to go there and know that everybody's taking care of everything. And not everybody has that privilege. If you're working for someone and you have a job, you've got a task and a job to go in and do. But if you go in there knowing, and I remember Bruce Harbert saying this to me one time, he said, if your pure intention is always love, he said, you can never be wrong. He said, people might get after you or get nitpick about things, but if your pure drive is just to be love and to have good intents, he says, you really can't be wrong. Because I always get nervous when I'm going to share, because I really don't want to talk about me and any accomplishments I've had. That's not why we're here. I tell the stories sometimes just to relate to these truths that we're sharing. But how do we escape the world of good and evil? Understanding that what we really are looking for has never, ever left us. Paradise never left Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve became constricted and began to be self-conscious, and it removed them out of this sense of paradise. Paradise is just a sense of living and understanding that it's everything all the time. And it's not about right or wrong, good or evil. This has been a very clear message that we've talked about a lot. So it's never left us. It's surrounding us all the time, and it's everything. Nothing is out of order. Ever. So I want to talk about perfect humility. Jesus said, whoever exalts himself shall be abased, and he that humble himself shall be exalted. Well, perfect humility is realizing there is no self. That's perfect humility. That's something. There isn't a self that needs to defend its way. There isn't a self that needs to be right all the time. How could you be right all the time if nothing's ever out of order? That's just humbling just to think of that. That perfect humility is realizing there is no self. And Jesus said that there. Who humble himself shall be exalted. Paul said, I am become a fool in glorying. ye have compelled me, for I ought to have been commended of you. For in nothing am I behind the very chiefest apostles, he said. In nothing, though I be nothing. It's all over Scripture talking about this. I don't know how many times Jesus said, the Son can do nothing of himself. Well, because he didn't worship the serpent idea of a separate identity. He knew the difference. That's why he kept saying it all the time, don't call me good. Well, I'm not sure he wanted to call him bad either, but he had a rough time of it. But he said, don't call me good. He said, enter in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be that go therein. Because the straight gate is a narrow in its way, which leadeth, the straight gate that's narrow in its way, leadeth to life. And few there be that find it. Well, what is the straight gate that's hard to find? It's this perfect humility. That's the straight gate. What person could you ever go to on the street or even in our gatherings or people that we touch with that would understand perfect humility is the death of you? Why did Jesus come? He was in a perfect example of this. Paul continues, wherefore henceforth know we no man after the flesh. Yea, though we have known Christ after the flesh, yet now henceforth know we him no more. No more. What happened to Jesus? Why isn't he still here, trying to help us with our world? Well, he vanished completely into thin air. Where did he go? He vanished into everything. You're going to be amazed by this piece I share with you tomorrow afternoon, because it talks about this. So it was so amazing. I couldn't believe it, sitting here reading this thing. And I knew there wasn't anyone in this group that understood what it meant. I was so surprised at how beautiful it was. Jesus taught very clearly the value of perfect humility and the power of nothingness. And Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood have eternal life. Well, what was this flesh and blood? What did he do? He laid down his life. He laid down his identity for his friends. Perfect humility. He laid it down. He realized life isn't about me. All there is life. As soon as we try to grab a hold a little bit of it, we're in hell. And this is the big dilemma, is we're grasping at things all the time, trying to control things all the time. And very seldom do we relax in this world. And this is what Jesus was sharing with us. This is his flesh and blood. And he continued in John 6, and he said, many therefore of his disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a very hard saying. Who can hear it? And when Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, does this offend you? Well, guess what? When we're told there's no you, it's pretty offensive. There's some good sides to it, right, that we just shared, but it's very offensive. There isn't anything popular about this message, and it said, most of them left him at that time, right after he said what I'm going to say to you next. He said, it's the spirit that quickeneth, the flesh profiteth nothing. Identity profiteth nothing. The me profiteth nothing. The me, the I, the you profiteth nothing. He didn't say it profiteth a little bit and give us a few pages of what profits you. He said, it profiteth nothing. The words I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. Perfect humiliation. I mean, perfect humility.
Humiliation.
Yeah, it's humiliating to the self, isn't it? Hmm? I guess that wasn't a Freudian slip.
There you go.
Robert Adams, who is a guy that is well known in the United States. He lived in California for years and years and then moved to Sedona. He summed it up this way. He said, the whole of life's ambitions has been to get better and better at self-inquiry.
At self what?
Self-inquiry.
Inquiry.
The whole of life ambition has been to get better at self-inquiry. The big dilemma is there's no self. There's no me. Now, guys, if we could really get a hold of this, you could just feel the contractions sort of calm down. You can just feel a sense of relaxation if we really get a hold of this, because we'll stop trying to control everything. And this is why if you can find a sense of relaxation and realize everything, every microsecond is being laid out for us, and it's never wrong. Yeah, it's hard, it's right. We've called this weekend series Out of Control. What does that mean? Well, everything to the self seems out of control. When we look at the world, when we look at difficulties, everything seems out of control. There's always choices that we think are going to change the world. And it's one of our biggest difficulties. Oh, I think I've got in the lesson tomorrow is that we're continually praying for peace in a paradise that's never out of order. And this is why Jesus said, peace, peace, there's no peace. Everybody's clamoring for peace and they have no peace. Because we're continually praying for peace in a world that's never out of order. The world that's out of order is our world. And what is our world? It's the world we judge. It's the world we create. And every one of us have a different world. They're like fingerprints. But they're our world. And Jesus said all the time, I'm going to leave my world and go to the Father. I'm going to withdraw from my world of right or wrong and return to the Father. What of perfect peace, perfect humility. What is reality? Reality is all there is. Reality is never out of order. Reality is every microsecond. It's this, right now. Paradise has never left us, folks. It's here, right now. It's all there is. As we can learn to embrace that and get out of our own way. I remember Dan Stone all the time saying when he used to, he's left us now, but he used to say, he said, the way to have a victorious life is to get out of your way. To get out of our own way. Because all our difficulties come from our judgment of the world in our own lives. And so tomorrow, we're going to talk about death and why Jesus said it was the last enemy. And how we're going to discover what it means to have victory over that, because it's very important. And so thank you, everybody. That's all for tonight. And we'll see you, everybody, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So we did good. It was a short one tonight, huh?
Thank you.
Yeah.